How long will you run? Before you realize, he's faster.
Well, hi, everyone. If you're joining us today from one of our locations, welcome to you. We're so glad that you're here. And if you're watching on TV in the Erie area, good morning to you as well. And if you're watching online, welcome. In the past couple of weeks, let me just tell you where people are checking into our services from. Again, these are just folks that are entering into our chat, letting us know that they're here. So maybe you're joining us from Lubbock, Texas, or Palm Coast, Florida, Columbia, Tennessee, Orlando, Lexington, Kentucky, Akron, Ohio, Easton, Massachusetts, Hart, Michigan, Eureka, California, Huntsville, Alabama, Elma, Washington, Cap-Haitien, Haiti, Chesapeake River, West Virginia, Springfield, Missouri, Sheraton, Wyoming, Shirley, Indiana, and the list goes on and on and on. And so as we gather today, you're literally part of a global gathering of believers as we look together to God's word. And so I would encourage you to keep inviting people, keep sharing what God is up to with your friends and your family, your neighbors, coworkers. He's on the move, guys, and he's doing a new work in our midst. Now, listen, we all love a good turnaround story, don't we? Like, there's something so inspiring about someone who is down and out, and then they turn things around to do something great. So Michael Jordan, for example, at age 15, he was famously passed over for a spot on the varsity basketball team. He went on to become the greatest basketball player of all time. And yes, I said it, LeBron fans. Or consider J.K. Rowling, the author of the famous Harry Potter series. At age 38, she'd failed at just about everything that she had attempted to do in her life, both personally and professionally. 12 major publishing houses rejected her first book, and she went on to become the first billionaire author. Or what about Abe Lincoln? He lost bids in the state legislature, a bid for the Speaker of the House, for Illinois House of Representatives. He lost a bid to become Commissioner of the General Land Office in D.C. and a U.S. Senator. And eventually, Abe Lincoln becomes the most famous, you know, failure to ever hold the highest office of president. Changed the world. So we love a good turnaround story. They give us all hope, don't they? I mean, most of us are in line, you know, aren't in line, I'm sorry, to become a sports hero or a billionaire or a president of the United States. But some of us could use a turnaround in our spiritual lives. And here's the problem with most turnaround stories. We know the beginning and we know the end, but we usually don't get to see how it actually happened. Like, we don't see how the sausage is made. And so today's going to be different. We're going to explore the ingredients of a true spiritual turnaround. Last week, we started a series in the book of Jonah. In fact, you can turn to Jonah now. It's a little book near the end of the Old Testament. Jonah's in the midst of all those books that sound like Star Wars characters. Jonah, Obadiah, Obi-Wan, Micah, Habakkuk, Chewbacca. All right, it's right in there. Jonah, he was a professional minister, and he had received a hard assignment. He was told to go to Nineveh, a city of great evil and torture, and to preach against them. And he ran in the complete opposite direction. But God basically said, no, this assignment is too important. I'm not going to let you run from me. And so God sent a big storm to the boat that Jonah was on. And the captain actually went down to Jonah and said, hey, Jonah, maybe, you know, like, I mean, you're the prophet and all. Like, if you were to call on the name of your God, maybe he would save us. But Jonah wasn't interested in praying just yet. And so he told the men, the only way to save yourself is to throw me overboard of this boat. And so they threw him overboard, and immediately the storm became calm. And the pagan sailors broke out into a worship service on the deck while Jonah got swallowed up by a whale. And so today we're going to look at the turnaround. And some of you are at a crisis point. Some of you are in the storm, and it's time to stop running. The storm isn't happening to pay you back. Storm's happening to bring you back. And here's what I want you to see today. It's my big idea. That when you're at your worst, God is at his best. And so we're going to pick up this story with Jonah at his very lowest moment. He's at his worst. He's in the belly of a great fish for 3 days and three nights. Each moment is longer than the last. And what I want you to see today is three ingredients that go into the makings of a spiritual turnaround. Check it out, okay? Here's what happens at the end of Jonah chapter 1. Verse 17, it says, and the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now, notice who's responsible here. It says, the Lord appointed a great fish. Did you catch that? Now, in the ancient world, the Jews were familiar with this mythical sea monster called Leviathan that had become the symbol of uncontrollable chaos on the sea. Everyone assumed that Leviathan was out there just beyond the horizon. Explorers were considered monster slayers, right? It's the uncontrolled chaos of the deep. And so to ancient ears, this verse, Jonah 1:17, says that God is in control of the uncontrollable forces. So I just ask you, what are the uncontrollable forces in your life right now? Is it your future? A relationship you can't control? Your finances? Your reputation? Guess what? God is in control of all the uncontrollable stuff in your life. So this great fish demonstrates both the grace of God and the greatness of God. God has the power to say, hey, fish. And the fish is like, yes, Lord. And God says, I want you to go pick up Jonah. Directions will be given on a need-to-know basis. But this is important. Swallow, don't chew, okay? And I'll tell you where to drop him off later. And the fish says, okay, Lord. And so we're seeing God's greatness and control over the chaos. And if you're struggling, you know, with, did this really happen? Go back to last week's sermon where I explained, I told you, that this is about like 20th on my list of hardest to believe things about the Bible. And so the whale swallows up Jonah. Can you just imagine for a second being inside that whale? Like, we have a very sanitized version of this in our mind. In the children's story, Pinocchio, remember his father Geppetto gets swallowed by a whale. And I remember the illustrations in all the kids' books showing Geppetto with, you know, these living quarters and this spacious, roomy cavity where he has a nice desk and place to hang his clothes up to dry. Or maybe, you know, when I was a kid, or if you grew up around the Erie area, maybe you remember at the Erie Zoo, there was a whale there with this mouth open where you could walk inside and you could stand on the tongue. Let me just say with some biological certainty, that's not what it was like for Jonah. Like, in fact, later in this passage, Jonah basically calls it hell. Think about it. The temperature would have been well over 100 degrees in there. He couldn't move his arms and legs. He's completely immobile for 3 days and nights. It was pitch black. Gastric juices were washing over him, bleaching his skin white. And the smell, can you imagine the smell? Like, some of you can't even walk along the beach on a muggy day because of the fishy smell. This would have been unbearable. Decomposing fish and seaweed and whatever else had found its way into this fish's stomach. And then Jonah. But on the positive side, Jonah had nothing else to do or think about for 3 days except to pray to God, which leads us to what I think was the first key of his spiritual turnaround, and that is to get rid of distractions, to get right with God. I want to remind you that what we're seeing here with this storm and with the whale and the whole crisis is not God being mean. It's God being merciful. Because as crazy as Jonah's current situation is, it's a gift from God because it's the means by which he can reconnect with his sovereignty and with his greatness. So think about what it might look like for all the distractions of your life to shut down for 3 days. What are those distractions for you? Is it social media? Is it your smartphone? Hobbies, addictions? Are there certain people in your life who are distraction? Like, what would it look like to get rid of those distractions for a while in order to get right with God? I think that's the gift that God has given to Jonah in the form of a whale. And I hope it doesn't have to go to such great lengths with you. In fact, we can do this proactively without God forcing it upon us. So one of the great ancient disciplines of the faith is the discipline of solitude. Solitude is simply this. It's a voluntary retreat from the company of others and from the distractions of everyday life. It's limited seclusion in order to focus on God. And so Christian solitude goes beyond just being alone. It's being alone and attentive to the voice of God. And so as busy as your life is, I promise that if you want to, you can find solitude. And during times of solitude, God has a chance to lead us, to direct us, to encourage us, to rebuke and empower and embolden us, to guide us, to discipline us, to comfort us. And so it's so important to have a time and a place to leave the distractions behind and to do our business with God. For some of you who are far from God, maybe you're running right now. Maybe you're at rock bottom. You're at your worst. Remember, that's when God's at his best. And solitude might be the answer for you. This might be the first step of your turnaround. Get away from the distractions, away from the noise and the screens and the images and the voices and the opinions and the pressures and the responsibilities, and get right with God. I want you to look at Jonah chapter 2, verse 1. It says this, "And then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish." All right, so the second ingredient of a turnaround is this. It's pray and invite God's strength into your weakness. Notice it says there, "Then Jonah prayed." It took 3 days and nights before the dude started to pray. Like, this gives us a picture of the depth of the struggle that Jonah was in. He was in a dilemma. Like, the Nineveh assignment was weighing on him. He didn't want to go and deliver this message of repentance to this very brutal and evil nation. But he was finally cornered. And he was finally having to look at his own heart and his own life in relation to this holy God. And Jonah had gone a long time without honestly praying to God. But here he was, and everything was gone. His cleverness, his privileges, his job, his relationships, none of those things mattered anymore. He didn't have anything left. And so Jonah hit bottom, and that's where God is greater than ever before. And so what do you do when you find yourself in that low place, when you're in over your head? Like, when you don't have any idea what to do next, here's what you do. You pray. Because prayer invites God's strength into your weakness. Hebrews 4:16 says it this way. It says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need." And so some of you are at your lowest moment today. Let me urge you to pray, to cry out to God in your weakness, because you're inviting in his strength. Your prayer doesn't need to be fancy. It doesn't need to be with these and thous. Be real, be respectful, be honest. Use your normal language and just talk to God like you'd talk to your best friend. I find it helpful if I'm by myself to speak my prayers out loud or to write them down in a journal. Speaking and writing kind of gives shape to your thoughts. But in his darkest moment, Jonah prayed. And it's a key step in returning to the purposes and priorities of God. And so the whole first chapter of Jonah, it contains human action. It's about Jonah making plans and Jonah having resources and Jonah's going places. And it's a disaster. And then the storm hits and Jonah's story grinds to a halt. You see, the alternative to telling God your will be done is for God to look back at you and say, "Okay, your will be done, Derek, your will be done." That's a terrifying prospect. Like, when God looks at Jonah and says, "Okay, we're going to try it your way," that's when things are going very badly. But in prayer, listen, in prayer, Jonah turns it back over to God. And so in the second chapter of Jonah, there's no action at all, just prayer. And then the good stuff starts to happen for Jonah. And this particular prayer that he prays is almost like reading one of the Psalms. Jonah probably composed the core of this psalm in his head while he was inside the great fish, and then he polished it up sometime after he was safely back on dry land. But verses 2-9 make up this great prayer. And so look at verse 2. Jonah says this. He says, "I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol," that's the word for hell, "I cried. And you heard my voice, for you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, into the flood surrounded me. And all your waves and your billows passed over me. And then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall again look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head and the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought me up. I'm sorry, you brought up my life from the pit. Oh, Lord, my God, when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord and my prayer came to you into your holy temple." This is an incredible prayer. Did Jonah feel like he'd been abandoned by God? Yes. Was he abandoned by God? No. Remember, when we're at our worst, God is at his best. And we see Jonah's constant back and forth here through his prayer. He's saying, "Here was my predicament, and here's how God responded." It's a really beautiful picture of the mercy and availability of God, even when we're at our worst. And so this represents the third aspect of a spiritual turnaround that I think is so important for us. The first was to get rid of distractions in order to get right with God. Second was to pray and invite God's strength into your weakness. But here's the third. And I want you to see that Jonah's prayer shows us something profound. It shows us his complete and utter mindset shift. from what he was trying to do on his own, and then when he puts things into God's hand. It's the very heart of this turnaround. So the third ingredient of a turnaround is to change your thinking. I want you to notice three mindset shifts from Jonah's prayer here in Jonah 2, 2 through 9. They are so important for each of us today. I want you to notice the maturity of his thought life. So the first mindset shift is this. He realizes that my life apart from God is hopeless. My life apart from God is hopeless. And so he starts taking inventory of his situation. And so he says, it's like hell in here. I'm in the belly of Sheol. And this is going to speak to some of you right now because some of you are in the middle of your own version of hell. And then in verses 3 through 6, he says things like, the flood surrounded me, the waves crashed over me, the weeds, were the chains were like wrapping around my head, the bars were like I was in a prison, they were closing around me forever. This sounds like an episode of Man versus Wild. Right? And he finally sees the reality of where he's running has led him. Like maybe for the first time in his entire life, Jonah realizes his depravity before a holy and righteous God. Because in verse 4, he concludes, he says, I'm driven away from your sight. And the language in Hebrew is actually, I was divorced from you. He's saying it was like he and God got a divorce. They filed the paperwork, they divided up the stuff. He felt totally separated from God, and it scared him. He realizes that he's wandered outside the bounds of God's plan for his life, and it's hopeless out there. But when Jonah admits, when he admits that when I needed God the most and when I deserved it the least, he was there for me. You see, spiritual turnarounds begin with an admission of our hopelessness apart from God, of our own depravity, of our inability to figure it out on our own. So regardless of how you're running today, there must come a day when you say, this is hopeless. That's what it takes for lots of people to understand their need for God. The problem with running, you see, is that you're trying to remove yourself from your creator. But because he created you, that means he's the one who knows how your life is supposed to work. Like you remove yourself from the source of wisdom and truth. You stop reading the Bible, you stop attending church, you stop gathering with your life group or your mentor, you stop praying, and eventually those decisions are going to come back to bite you because you're cutting off contact with the very one who knows how your life is supposed to work. And so you start having financial messes and you start having relational messes and you have messes with your kids. Why? Because as smart as you are and as savvy as you are and as careful as you are going to be, when you turn your back on your source of truth, you inevitably make dumb decisions. And you can be sure that you're going to hit this moment when you say, my life isn't working. And so the turnaround begins with a note of despair. And then there comes a moment of clarity when you say, why am I trying to do this without God? And you recognize where your running has led you. And you figure out what Jonah figured out. My life without God is hopeless. And then in verse 8, he comes to another mindset shift. He says that those who pay regard to vain idols, forsake their hope of steadfast love. I like how the NIV says it. It says those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. So the second mindset shift is one that says, my idols are empty. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. Whew, that's heavy. And this might be the key verse in the whole book of Jonah. It's an incredible turning point in this prayer. So Jonah shifts his tone. Now remember, Jonah was a prophet. His job was to declare the truth. And that's what he does right here over himself. And you can hear the seriousness of his tone. It's as if from the deepest point of his life, he's warning everyone who will listen, including us. And he's saying basically, like, whatever you do, don't do what I did. Whatever you do, don't run from God. Whatever you do, don't neglect him. Don't disobey him. Why? Because those who cling to worthless idols, they forfeit the grace that could be theirs. They forfeit the chesed, this Hebrew word, literally, the pursuing love of God. And in this moment, Jonah realized that despite going through all the religious motions, like he was the one attending synagogue every week, he was the one lifting up his hands in worship for everyone to see. He has actually been worshiping something other than God, and he still had these idols in his life. And when we hold on to our idols, we forfeit the grace that could be ours. And so you may have idols in your life, and you say, come on, Derek, I might sin, but I don't have any like golden calf statues laying around my house. No. You misunderstand. An idol is anything that you love, trust, and crave more than God. And so we come up with all kinds of things that could be idols, but idolatry starts with deeper roots. Pastor and author Tim Keller said it this way. He says there are basically four root idols that serve as the heart motivator for all other things that we tend to put ahead of God. He says that the four root idols are power, control, comfort, and approval. So power is longing for influence or recognition. Control is a longing to have everything to go according to my plan. Comfort is a longing for pleasure. Approval is a longing to be accepted or desired. And so these things cause us to attach ourselves to things in this world. So someone may long, for example, for a promotion and the accompanying increased salary. There's nothing wrong with these things. But it's the intensity of the desire that makes it sinful. Or as Calvin stated, the evil in our desire typically does not lie in what we want, but that we want it too much. And so the root idol could be from different, different for someone who's longing for that same promotion. So a person with a power idol, for example, they want the bigger salary, not because of the money, but because of the status that the money will offer them. They're the person with a control as an idol, wants the bigger salary to save more money, to eliminate uncertainty and gain more assurance for their future. A person with a comfort idol, for example, wants that they want the new toys that they'll now be able to afford from that increased salary. The person with an approval idol, for example, wants to use those new toys to win friends. They want the approval of people. And so we all struggle with idolatry. And Jonah's words here remind us that when we cling to these idols over God, we actually forfeit the grace of God that could be ours. And so what's the answer to idolatry? Like, is it behavior modification? Is it to try to loosen our grip on all the promotions and toys and relationships that are standing in our way? No, it's actually to strengthen our grip on God's grace. Like, the reason our heart craves these other things is not because we love those other things. It's because our heart is not consumed with the love of God. You see, what you're looking for is not in a new marriage. It's not being at the top of your class. It's not the highest paying job. It's not an affair with your fitness instructor. It's not that new hobby or that new drug. What you're longing for is the chesed, the pursuing love of God. And so don't loosen your grip on the stuff. Start by strengthening your grip on him. Don't forfeit the grace that could be yours by clinging to worthless idols. They're empty. That's the second mindset shift. Here's the third. Only God can save me. I want you to look at verse 9. He says, "But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed. I will pay, and salvation belongs to the Lord." And so Jonah's turnaround has this exclamation point. He realizes again what he's already knew all along, that only God can save. And he's renewing his willingness to go to the Ninevites, to do what God tells him to do, to say what God tells him to say, because salvation isn't a Jonah deal. Salvation is a God deal. And Jonah was in this big old fish, and it was settled. There was nothing that he could do to contribute to his own salvation. Nothing. Things were totally out of his control. He couldn't even go through the religious motions to make himself feel good about himself. He couldn't make a sacrifice to God. He couldn't give money at the temple. He couldn't do good works. He couldn't feed the poor. There's nothing that he could do to get out of that fish. And he realized his total and utter helplessness, his total need for God. This is a lesson for us all. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Like, I think about this election mess. People have set their hopes on people. Only Trump could save our country. Only Biden could save our country. Let me remind you, no matter if you're happy or sad about how this thing is going right now, that salvation belongs to the Lord. This was the final line of Jonah's prayer before he was rescued. Some scholars say that this verse summarizes the message of the whole Bible. Jonah found the greatest gift of all in the belly of that fish. He found grace because he realized the hopelessness of doing life on his own without God. You see, some people criticize Christianity by saying, well, Christianity is just an emotional crutch for weak people. No. That gives us way, way too much credit. That makes it sound like, we have a sprained ankle or something. No, Christianity is not a crutch for the weak. Christianity is a new heart for the dead. The Bible doesn't present a God who helps the weak to be strong. It presents a God who helps the dead to be alive. And so that fish's belly, it was not Jonah's prison. It was not a death chamber. It was a temporary hospital for his soul and a protection for his body from the ocean depths. It was good for Jonah to be there because it took this crisis for Jonah to realize that salvation was totally out of his hands and found only under the waterfall of God's good grace. Now, that may be the gift of your crisis as well, whatever it is you're walking through. Look at verse 10. It says, "And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land." Now, is it just me, or is that a little more detail than we really needed? If you wonder why the English translators of the Bible didn't choose a more dignified, you know, like churchier, more Jesus-y word than vomit, it's not because they wanted all the fifth grade Sunday school kids to laugh. It's actually because in the original inspired text, the Hebrew word is even more graphic than this. So vomit is the cleaned up version here. The writer wants to hit us over the head. He wants to make sure that we notice that Jonah did not get dropped off by an angel on a pillow-soft cloud of heavenly comfort. No. The whale tossed his cookies, the whale lost his lunch, launched the food shuttle, had a technicolor yawn. He wants us to get the gory picture of what happened here. Jonah ends up on the shore, not a tragic figure covered with suffering, not a heroic figure covered with glory. Jonah ended up a ridiculous figure covered with shrimp cocktail and tuna tartare. Why? Why does this chapter end almost with a chuckle? I believe it's pointing us to joy. And to hope. You see, it turns out that when human beings are in a downward spiral, God is up to something great. And from God's perspective, death and the grave and Sheol, they're no problem at all. Human rebellion and stubbornness is not a problem. God laughs at it. Because when we're at our worst, God is at his best. God laughs at death. He laughs at the grave because he knows that one day we will understand that joy wins. And at its core, Jonah's a book that points us to joy because there's another character that we can read between every line in this book. Jonah, we are told, is from a town called Gath Hepher. It's a little ancient town that was just a few miles away from another town called Nazareth. Anybody remember another prophet who would later come from Nazareth? Jonah was asleep in a boat in a storm when everyone else in the boat panicked and they woke him up, and by his actions, the storm is stilled. Remember anybody else like that? Jonah was cast out into the sea and the sea became calm. He was swallowed by a fish and taken down into the depths of the ocean. Then 3 days later, he was brought back to the land of the living. You see, Jesus was cast out onto the depths of God's ocean and God's wrath at the cross, and the great tempest of God against our sin became calm. He was in the heart of the earth for 3 days, like Jonah, and then resurrected again. The difference was that Jonah went through all of this involuntarily because of his disobedience, and Jesus went through it all because of our disobedience. Jesus did everything right that Jonah did wrong. Jonah ran from his enemies. Jesus ran toward them. Jonah was on a mission of revenge because he hated the Ninevites. Jesus came on a mission of rescue because he loved them. The message of Jonah is a foretaste of the victory of Jesus, who comes to meet us at our very worst, because that's when he's at his very best. And he came to meet us at our lowest place so that he could remind us that death loses, that sin loses, that loss loses, sorrow loses, sadness loses. And guess what, guys? Joy wins. God gets the last laugh in this whole grand story. And that allows us to walk through it with incredible confidence. And yes, even joy. And sometimes it takes a crisis to facilitate a turnaround. And some of you are at the crisis point right now, and you have to choose. And let me remind you that it's never too late to quit running from God. Maybe you've been running in really obvious ways. People around you who know you and love you can see it. But maybe you've been running in secret, hidden ways. Maybe you were hardly even aware of it until right now, because it's been more of a subtle and internal drifting rather than running. And the Spirit of God is revealing it to you even now as I speak. Maybe a storm has hit you hard. Guys, don't wait for the storm to get any worse. Jesus always has the same invitation. Come running to me. Running away doesn't work. If you're in a storm, turn around. Surrender. Give yourself over to him. Change won't come by just saying, you know, I want to be a better person or something. You have to experience grace. It's the unconditional acceptance granted to an undeserving person by an unobligated giver. When you're at your worst, you see, God is at his best. And Jonah found out, to his surprise, that there's love beneath the waves. God's love and his grace, they keep coming relentlessly. The Bible's clear that the sin above all sins is that you are too proud to accept the great love of Christ for you. You don't have to drown in the waves because there was one who drowned for you, and he did it willingly so that you might truly live. And if you need that grace today, if you need that salvation, I want to urge you, wherever you are, take out your phone and text the word new life to 94090. There's a little short form there. We're going to get you some resources and get you on your way to walking with Christ. And for everyone else, I think our next step today is simply this. I'm just going to ask you to pick one of those three ingredients that I focused on today, one of the three aspects of a spiritual turnaround, and figure out which one of them needs your attention this week. Like, do you need to get rid of distraction to get right with God? Do you need to pray and invite God's strength into your weakness? Do you need to change your thinking? Pick one of those and do the next right thing to facilitate your spiritual turnaround. And I believe you'll find, as Jonah did, that there's love beneath the waves. I love you guys. See you next week.